Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to my second season of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and I am here with my friend Dominic Sirica. How are you, Dominic?
Oh, I'm very good, Monique. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Dominic is not only an architect, but he lives in a Roger Lee in Lafayette, and he's going to tell us a little bit today about his home, and we're going to talk about Roger Lee and this beautiful connection to this mid-century modern architect that we love so much. So Roger Lee was a Chinese-American, and he was a modernist architect who designed more than 100 houses and other projects in Northern California, in Nevada, and Hawaii. And you have lived in your Roger Lee for over 25 years now.
Yes. It's an interesting story, actually. My wife and I were literally looking to buy a couch. And somehow we wound up buying a modernist masterpiece in Lafayette. Okay, so how does that, how did that weekend go?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of went like this. We were in San Francisco, and we did that sort of migratory pattern of the, in our case, it was meet, move, then marry.
Okay, out of order.
Well, right,
just
short of having children. No, hold on, we're getting married first. and then the children came. But it really did start out as innocently as thinking about, you know, when we were looking to make a lifestyle choice, are we going to stay in San Francisco? Or, as we decided, to recreate some elements of a lifestyle with a dog and a car and a yard, right? Mm-hmm. And so we my wife and I, are neither of us are from California. So okay. We really didn't have a working mental map of our area. And through just general conversations with colleagues and friends, we were looking at, all three areas of the Bay, the peninsula, Marin County, and then having no knowledge of the East Bay other than perhaps the history book reference to an early Charles Moore house, right, in Orinda. But our friend said, no, really, take a look out there. And so Memorial Day weekend of 1998, as it turns out, we were, just going from one open house to another. On a Saturday, and we sort of fell in love with this one landscape property, but the house was very uninspired. Mm. That real estate agent said, hey, I think I know of a property, and that happened to be this property. And so we sort of stopped in on a Saturday, couldn't access the property. At this point, wasn't really on the market. And then sort of a first peek, and this is where the architectural education sort of paid dividends, is all I could see was this horizontal line that peaked out from the landscape. Mm. And I said, I know what's back there.
And then, called to you right away.
So from there, as it turned out, real estate-wise, the house happened to be in escrow. It dropped out of escrow, recontacted the real estate agent, and we made an appointment to see it the next day. So that was sort of the earliest introduction to not only the modernist jewel that was behind the overgrown landscape, but also, an introduction to the East Bay and what it turned out to be, this legacy of Roger Lee.
Oh my gosh. And that first look, I love how you're describing that you just saw this horizontal line. And so many people are immediately struck by these designs, these modernist houses, and they have such an impact the first time you see them. I felt the same way. You're hit with this strange, you don't know what comes over you. You have sort of a strange, all of a sudden interest in finding out what the rest of the house looks like because the front is so mysterious.
Well, interestingly enough, and this we'll tie together a couple of things. One of them is the architect Roger Lee's sort of philosophy on design, and the other one was you know, sort of that sort of nondescript living. That line turned out to be the carport, you know, of what is or was a 1,600 square foot, three bedroom, two bathroom house on a 3/4 acre, semi-rural lot.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting about that nondescript facade was that was kind of Roger Lee's signature. There were two things that defined his architecture based on my limited research of his work is that they were built out of nondescript and relatively non-expensive materials, right? And so, and they didn't present a big public facade. In fact, the other feature of his houses was the hidden front door.
Yes.
You kind of had to go find it a little bit. And so when you would walk up to this house, you sort of walked up to a blank facade and then made a hard right. And there was the front door.
Yes.
And so it was a little bit of a mystery, and I think by design,
mm-hmm.
as it
That's
turns
right.
out.
After studying his work, I found, you're right, there's this inconspicuous front door. There's usually the flat roof. Sometimes they're pitched, sometimes not. Walls of glass everywhere but the primary bedroom. And then, of course, you have the radiant heat, the post and beam construction, and the concrete slab foundation. So you purchased this home, what was it, a weekend?
Very funny story, right? I mean, that's how lucky we got. I think I told you my wife nor I were from this part of the country. So, you know, we saw this house on a Saturday. We made arrangements to visit on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, again, Mrs. Zion, Betty, who became a friend, was living there. So we didn't even open a closet. I mean, we were like, we're an interloper in someone's house. So we made the offer on Monday.
Wow.
So we literally bought it on Memorial Day weekend. And
yes.
then we went back to San Francisco for the next 6 months because we rented it back for Betty as she made her transitional living plans. So it was the most fortuitous purchase, only to be doubled down by the fact that Lafayette is a wonderful town to raise a family. And we didn't really know that at the time either. We literally fell in love with this house, and it was a purchase against any other consideration.
Yes, that's so beautiful. And the design just captured you. We bought this home the same way. We saw it, we saw the view, we were done.
Yeah. I bought a horizontal line. What did you buy?
Exactly. We bought a horizontal line too. So can you walk me through a beautiful day in the home? What are some of the features that you love the most?
Oh, it's by far the quality of light. You know, because we have north-facing clear story windows, south-facing wall, floor-to-ceiling glass. You know, so, you know, the best days are a Saturday or a Sunday when I'm in my yard clothes and I've got a cup of coffee and I'm, you know, heading out the door for, you know, maintaining the 3/4 of
yes.
a rural existence that we have. So that's what I love about the house.
Beautiful. So what has transpired for you over the years? Have you had difficulties in your remodel? How has that been?
You know, I think part of the fun of our discussion will be, mm-hmm. hey, what's it like to be living in the house and raising a family in a modernist, you know, house? And I think we adopted rule number one very quickly, which is there is no running or ball playing in the house for dogs and kids alike, because there is floor-to-ceiling plate glass. So as you kind of listed the attributes of his design style, it was like check, check, and check.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit of an interesting backstory. We're only the second owners of this house. We actually purchased it from the original owner. So, you know, for a house that was designed in 56 and constructed in 57, that's kind of saying something. That's
right.
A two-owner house.
Right.
And it was William and Betty Zion. And Betty Zion was still with us at the time and sold us the property. And Down to, and now we're going to get into the micro details, but it has the original George Nelson atomic ball clock, which was hardwired into the house. And I sort of made the position, well, the clock has to stay. And she said, that was our wedding gift.
Well, it's well, attached. Well,
the clock stayed. Yeah. And I did offer her a little stipend for it, of course. So it was a privilege to be able to, and this is one of the things. We're purveyors of these, fine art installations for future generations. I think that is one attitude that probably does link all of us modernist homeowners together. Because in a lot of ways, they do take special care. And maybe that is sort of the soft link to what's it like living in there. There's a couple of ideas. The radiant floor heating. Thankfully, these houses were constructed very well, even though they were done of inexpensive materials at the time. For instance, our radiant floor heating still works. And all it is copper tubing embedded in the concrete slab. Mm-hmm. I have had it x-rayed, so I do kind of know where it is, so I don't do that catastrophic mistake of, attaching something through it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing we had to replace, and it was only maybe about 10 years ago, was the actual furnace. So all the plumbing was good, but the actual furnace, only survived 60 years or so. We got our money's worth out of that. And that kind of leads into, sort of how we have treated the property over time.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any design challenges or anything come up that's been difficult for you to make the changes that you wanted? Or have there been?
Some. Okay. Like, for instance, the sliding glass doors are metal casements, and you can't really quite get them anymore, fabricated steel, welded steel things. As you may imagine, all of them, there is no insulation in the house. Right. All of the glass is single pane, right? So when you talk about renovations or upgrades, even current codes would require you to build with certain materials like insulated glass. So there is some tricks about how you make it look relevant and respectful to the original design, utilizing, and correctly so, the best of modern materials. So there's a little bit of that. Then there's probably some things in doing some research, about the flat roofs. Our house happens to have both flat roof and a singular pitched roof over the open space and great room. And there's different details for that. But, ultimately you want to respect, I would use the word, the clean lines of the house. Our property is very orthogonal, which means it's very right lines, the right angles, if you will. You try to avoid anything that doesn't respect that original design intent.
I read that Roger Lee influenced Beverly David Thorne a lot when he was creating Case Study House number 26. And by the way, we will be talking to that homeowner in a later episode. But being an architect yourself, how has his architecture inspired your work? And what do you see has been influential to different architecture in the East Bay?
Roger Lee seems to be in the history books a missed modernist celebrity. Or an underrated modernist architect. I think we could probably create a few monikers. I think time will correct that. His work is significant. Mm-hmm. But as far as the linearity of legacy, if you will, right? I sort of hearken back to, one of sort of my heroes, of course, and it would be Frank Lloyd Wright. And the many careers, I think seven of them by the history books that Wright entertained, but clearly his Usonian period. And in fact, my house has been nicknamed by my architect friends as my little Usonian experiment. So I would say, Wright's work is the predecessor of a lot of this stuff. And we benefit from having a number of Wright buildings in our locale here.
That's right.
Whether they're some of his commercial buildings or his residential work was just fabulous. So anyway, I think that there's a direct legacy between the work that Lee had done, the work that Wright had promoted clearly, and how it influenced the next generation, and I would argue current generations of thinking.
I completely agree. I did see a great remodel. My friend John Klopf remodeled a Roger Lee in Stanford, which is Santa Clara County. I believe he did two homes in Santa Clara, one property, also a church Roger Lee did in Santa Clara. But John did such a great remodel, and I love how you can take these really nostalgic, you know, things like the detached fireplaces or things like the cork flooring. You know, you leave these things in, but you still make the home functional. You make it a little more comfortable. And I think that he's influencing people of today so much. I've seen a lot of home tours, oddly enough, recently. Recently, I've heard the most of Roger Lee that I ever have. A friend of ours, Paul Adamson, also owns Roger Lee. And I feel that there are groups of people that will live in a certain home done by a certain architect, and you have an immediate bond with these people. Like Paul and my other friend Camilla, they started a home tour of Roger Lee's work. And have you seen that these groups kind of gather together and, you know, they do these home tours, or they kind of are bonded in this way through the architecture?
Clearly, I would say yes. You know, interestingly enough, Lee's work didn't follow a single formula. There were two-story houses, commercial houses, religious buildings, as you said. But yes, there. I think there is a, you know, I don't want to use the, there's an alike living, whatever I want to try to say. It's not certainly a cult-like living, but there is an appreciation for the elements of what a modern house provides for, which is the open plan living and the generous use of light. The thing that I noticed so effectively about our house was the siding. Our house has no air conditioning, and it never needed it. Because of the siding with, it has the primary south-facing elevations, the overhanging eaves that allows the solar gain from the winter, but not in the summer. The, the open jalousie windows that allow for the cross ventilation, on and on and on. So they're so well designed. And I think that those of us that have the good fortune to live in them and to be purveyors for future generations, as we talk about, do get to benefit from that holistic lifestyle. And then there's that whole California thing, the inside-outside living, which these houses promote.
That's right.
And so a small house is larger beyond its footprint.
That's right. So Roger Lee went to Berkeley, studied architecture there, and he then moved to Hawaii and was moving his practice there as well. But the majority of his homes are in Berkeley. There's some in Tahoe, Kensington, even Beverly Hills, Contra Costa, as I mentioned, the one in Stanford here that my friend remodeled. The majority of them in Berkeley, some in Sausalito, San Francisco. I'm reading down this list of all of his homes, and there are over 100, so I'm just going to cover the areas where he primarily worked.
Yeah, that's a successful practice, over 100 built projects.
Yes.
In a period of time, you know, for his work.
Yes, mostly in Marin. And I feel like, you know, these groups have gotten together, and through a lot of the press, I've seen at least 6 articles come out in the last couple years about Roger Lee's work. I think this is connecting people as well. And I wanted to ask you, I have to say that the work done to these remodels and the homes featured in the press, they are adding a lot of features that are not original to the homes. How do you feel about The painted ceilings, as we discussed before, audio, but we discussed the painted ceilings and the whiting out of these homes.
You know, these are little jewel boxes. I'll answer the question in a number of different ways. I guess I adopt more of the Wrightian philosophy as well, as they're not precious. They are laboratories for experiment. And as an architect, you can imagine this is a little bit of a sandbox, you know, career for me, where I do have my own, you know, sort of, you know, Usonian experiment, to reuse the phrase, to, you know, kind of develop. The houses originally designed in the 20th century had different attributes, right? Let's just say the rooms were smaller. They were open plan, but not as open as even the plans we have today. And I'll explain, you know, kind of how that transitioned. And so over time, through just the general need to replace, like the example of a furnace, or just creating spaces that are more akin with our 21st century living. I would say that, mm-hmm. you know, primary bathrooms, you know, primary bedrooms have the en suites and some stuff like this. So what I have done as an example is not only updated the equipment, but I've also expanded the livability of the house. So mm-hmm. it's now a basic, what was a 3-2 is a 4-3. And what was a two-car carport is still a two-car carport, except I added a three-bay garage next to it because I do like cars, and right. that's part of California. So, right. so you know, and it is absolutely respecting the original design guidelines, if you will, the design intent. So I'm not just dug in my heels. It has to be the exact way it was designed in 1956. Right. I think, you know, if you respect the design aesthetic and the ideals, and you can continue to, you know, make it applicable yes. to modern life, you have a better chance of advancing these properties for future occupants and such.
That's right.
You know,
that's
so
right.
as opposed to tearing them down. And we've seen great examples, even recently, of modern icons that haven't stood the test of time.
That's right. Well, I think after living in this house for 2 years, we wanted to keep everything original. We thought, oh my gosh, everything, you know, the formica, the cabinetry. Well, after 2 years, these cabinets cannot open without an extreme amount of pressure and work. And I had a moment where I was getting ready for work. And I thought, you know what, this damn drawer, I cannot open this for the life of me. So there comes a time when you say, you know what, this isn't working for me anymore.
I think that same example was the generator for my first renovation. The cabinets in the kitchen were literally hanging off their hinges. And I'm like, this is embarrassing. We can't have people over now. We've got to do something about this.
We can't have people over.
No, it was like, don't you guys care? Well, we care, but we're trying to hold the tradition. No. At some point, we buy new cabinets.
It's too difficult.
And once you go down the new cabinet, well, where do you stop? Plumbing goes, But I think that's the... That becomes this sort of great marriage between, you know, the old and the new. You know, there's another thing I've noticed about modern living, that or modern homes, especially in their context, I want to ask you a question about, is that
yes.
the houses that we're talking about, these Roger Lee houses, are kind of custom one-offs in their own little beautiful right. sighting, their pockets. In fact, I do know that Roger Lee would actually go with the homeowner to select the site.
Yes.
And do the drawings specific to that site. And my point of reference is this. As much as I like Eichler homes, there seems to be something when they're all together that makes them a little less iconic than when they're standing alone.
Yes.
And somehow I think that the modernist houses are best when they have a little bit of space
around.
When
they stand alone.
Right? And I was curious about your perspective and your great
absolutely.
You know, view on things.
Absolutely. I have so many clients that, you know, they become heirs of these Eichler homes, and they say, you know, we don't want to live next to all of these people that have the same model house, and we grew up here. We just are sick of it. And you're right. Everyone is so close to each other, and they have the same house. So I feel that people that grew up in them have a very different take on them than we do. When I lived in an Eichler, I was in heaven every day. That's what started me on mid-century modern houses. That's what, you know, really opened the door to all of this. And now that I live in a custom mid-century modern home, I feel that the space, the land, looking out at this view, this is a very different experience. Not to say that my Eichler experience wasn't magical. It really, really was. But I think that these one-offs, they were site specific. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking down on Stanford. There's a great view. We have a little bit of a bigger property. But these custom homes came with more thought, more design, more integration to nature and the site. So I think a lot of people do want to be, you know, in a different area and feel that special, unique design.
I would say that either is a fantastic, yes, you know, way of engaging with the architecture and a modern,
right,
way of living. It just happens if you get to these, they are, as you best described, it's site specific.
Right.
And they do take advantage of that nature and, you know, construction relationship.
Right. How have your kids liked growing up in a Roger Lee?
Well, my daughter's a second-year architecture student, so that seems to be a cause and effect. It's not my fault. It really isn't. It's her
it's
own
all
choice.
Your fault.
But she did grow up in a glass house with Eames,
yes,
furniture, so I guess, you know, the yes, wasn't going to fall far from the tree, the acorn, as they say. but no, the kids loved it. I think that... Well, here's a good example. So, you know, my daughter goes to school in New England, and her friend comes out to visit, and it's exactly, and her friend lives in Providence, Rhode Island, so this is exactly what she expected, California living to be back. Well, you all live in glass houses out here, don't you? So it did fulfill a certain expectation. So I think that the kids have loved it. I certainly think they have a great appreciation for things. And ultimately, it does come off occasionally, like when they see something that isn't well designed, they just sort of bring it up. And I'm like, yeah, welcome to my world. You know,
right,
this is what the curse of an architect walking through the world going, why would you do that?
Well, they have the luxury of growing up in that beautiful design and all of that light and, you know, beautiful architecture. I think it does change the way you live and the way you experience things. I think even just sitting, you know, for example, sitting in this living room when I've had a stressful day at work, I can sit here and look out and the architecture just brings me back to center.
It's a lot of inside-out architecture. You know, when you really talk about the experience, as much as the forms, you know, from an exterior create the partie for the design, you know, architectural jargon for, you know, kind of the big idea, the joy is the experience as we sit here in your dining room overlooking a beautiful southern exposure. You know, these are the kind of things. So, you know, I think it does create a dialogue and it does promote architecture from the inside out in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Mm. What has been the best part for you, as we're winding down to my last question here, what has been the best part for you living in a Roger Lee design?
I think you might have hit upon it. Beyond my own little, you know, kind of personal passion for the experimentation is the sense of community. You really do sort of, it does come up in conversation. That's about the best way I could describe it. Whether it's a mid-century modernist, an original red wooden glass house, an indoor-outdoor living, there's a lot of ways to sort of promote the benefits of what we've enjoyed to our you know, friends and people. Friends and colleagues, I'm trying to say that. So people inside the industry and people not.
Right.
But I do think that the sense of community is a wonderful, and then there's that. Because the living itself is plenty of enjoying,
right,
you know, just the quality of light. But we do have all concrete floors, heat. Well, it's because, you know, so you do have to create some, I don't want to call them rules of living. Let's just call it good guidelines.
Good, you know? Guidelines, absolutely.
My kids didn't do a lot of crawling. They were on their feet fast, as I recall.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Dominic. This has been really beautiful to discuss Roger Lee. And thank you for being the first episode of the second season.
Monique, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.